This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to our first 2017 edition of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. You know, before the holidays, I thought, it would really be good to do something about teaching our children contentment. And I thought, you know, Mom and Dad probably already did their Christmas shopping and this would be bad timing. So maybe that would be a good thing while people are in a highly resolved mood during the traditional period here in January where people are reflecting and setting goals and such.
We know it's hard, Hal. Our kids are sinners, just like we are.
Yeah, they inherited it from my side of the family, I think.
They inherited it from both sides.
They're from both sides, yeah.
I know. But, you know, naturally, as sinners, we want me, mine, give me everything.
Mm-hmm.
And contentment, being content with what you have, is something that you really have to teach, or you're going to end up with a bunch of whiny, ungrateful children.
Well, what's the 10th commandment? Thou shalt not covet. I mean, that's about contentment, isn't it? About
it really
is. Being content with what you have and not setting your desires so strongly on other people's belongings I think it's important to remember that is a real struggle. I mean, that's one of the things that the Apostle Paul himself talks about struggling with. You know, that he said that he struggled with covetousness. You know, in Romans chapter 7, when he talks about struggling with the inner man and remaining sin in his life, and he talks about the law coming in and just the commandment, don't covet, like that stirred it up for him. And so it's a real struggle to say, yeah, I'm not naturally content, and I do sometimes desire things more than I should, and I know that. What do I do with my kids? But, you know, I guess leading into that, this is something the Bible talks about a great deal.
Well, we're commanded to be content. Well, there are promises with the contentment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1 Timothy 6:6, starting following, says, mm-hmm. Now godliness with contentment is great gain.
Right.
For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out.
Mm-hmm.
And having food and clothing with these, we should be content.
Yeah, and that's the passage that goes on that talks about the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And so, yeah, godliness with contentment is a great gain. You know, and okay, look at 2 Corinthians chapter 9, in verse 8. It says, God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. You know, that God provides for us. God takes care of us, and we should look to him to take care of us.
And then if we have an abundance, it's not to be spent on just our selfish desires, but on good works.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Sermon on the Mount, you know, Jesus says in that passage in chapter 6 of Matthew, that therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you.
That is so hard to do, Hal.
That is, isn't it?
This morning, I woke up, and I wanted to go back to sleep, and I started worrying.
Mm.
And, well, better get up. And, you know, that's not the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be, you know, Philippians 4 tells us,
mm-hmm.
I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound.
Yes.
Everywhere and in all things, I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, there's not many people in our listening audience that are ever hungry and can't do something about it.
No. But I think, you know, that's an interesting verse, well, on several fronts. But one of them being that there are temptations if you feel that you're in want. And even if you're legitimately in want, there are temptations associated with that. There's temptations associated with plenty, with having an abundance of things. You know, and Paul talks about learning how to handle both of them. You know, in the Proverbs, I think it's Proverbs 30 or 31, it's where the prayer is made to remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. You know, there's temptations on both sides of that.
There really are.
And maybe, you know, that, okay, so contentment kind of enters in on the both of them to say, hey, I don't have everything that I could want and desire, but I will be content in what God's provided. Just the same as saying, I'm surrounded by more wealth than King Louis the 16th had access to, and it's more than enough. I am content with this. I don't have to double it next year. You know, that in either end of that, you can covet. In fact, I think St. Augustine said that a man can sin the sin of covetousness over a crust of bread. You ever think about that? You know, or maybe it was lust. But anyway, you know, the idea that even a very little bit in certain circumstances may be a temptation to you, and the struggle is very real.
Well, you know, we see that in our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one of them will sneak to get an extra bit of French onion dip. You know.
Yeah.
You know that we can be tempted by the smallest things.
Did you notice that back when the speed limit was like 55, that people would drive 58?
I know.
You know, and then when the speed limit went up to 70, people would drive 72. You know, you think, well, what is it? Why aren't you content with what you've got? Well, because we are sinners and it's a struggle. We grown-ups struggle with it. Our kids are going to naturally struggle with it. And particularly if we don't teach them a better way and hold them to a better aspiration.
But, you know, ultimately it's God that determines our wealth. And we've got to remember that, because it's really easy when we're doing well mm-hmm. to look down on those who aren't. I remember just feeling really, looking down on a family I knew that was deeply in debt. You mm-hmm. know, I felt like they'd been profligate. And then we had a bunch of health issues and ended up in debt. And I'm like, I didn't feel so proud anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, 1 Samuel 2:7 mm-hmm. says, the Lord makes poor and makes rich. Mm-hmm. He brings low and lifts up.
Well, okay. Deuteronomy chapter 8. As God is speaking to the people about, they're about to step off into conquering the promised land. And he warns them throughout this chapter about the dangers of the prosperity that they're going to experience. And he says that when you reach that level of prosperity, when you are there with the vineyards that you didn't plant and the fields that you didn't sow and the houses that you didn't build, and you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. Wow, doesn't that sound like us?
Oh, it's easy to do.
Hey, I worked hard. I paid my dues. I climbed the ladder. Therefore, I'm successful. He says, when you say this in your heart, you shall remember that the Lord your God is he that gives you the power to give wealth.
Yeah, I was reminded of that today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I checked a website for an affiliate that we're affiliates for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing, huge amount. And I thought, oh, wow, look at that. This is going to be incredible. This is going to be such a blessing. It's going to help us so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then hours later, I found out that it was a computer glitch.
Oops.
Psst, it disappears. And, you know, I had to remind myself not to glory in something that had come about just by God's grace, nor to be angry when the Lord took it away, because
mm-hmm.
it's all in his hands.
Right. Right. So, we have got the blessing and the burden of training up these young people that God's given us in our family.
Now,
how are we going to teach this lesson to our kids when it's a hard thing for us to do as grown-ups?
Well, we have to do it, though, because
mm-hmm.
they need to be content as part of their service to God.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they're going to be a whole lot easier to live with if they are.
I think it's important we always keep in mind when we start to talk about discipling our children to remember that we are not standing on our own righteousness, because it's very easy sometimes to look at our child and they're stumbling in the same areas that we have stumbled in the past and to think, poor child, he's got my weakness. I'm not going to bother him about it because I'm so full of sympathy. And in any way, I don't really have standing to say, son, don't do that. I did it, but don't you do it.
That's not wise.
That's not wise, because God tells us to teach these things to our children, even though maybe sometimes because we ourselves have struggled and stumbled and fell. We're teaching it because God commands it, not because we have earned some exalted moral status.
Not trying to pretend that we don't have a battle, though.
No, no. Well, mm-hmm. I think, so I think, you know, one of the first things is always to ask ourselves, are we setting an example? You know, are we contented people?
You know, I was so convicted of this yesterday, Hal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was so tired and I felt bad. I had a sinus headache and you got up and fixed breakfast. And I had just been helping a mom who was dealing with discontented children. And one of the kids brought my breakfast in here to me and you hadn't heated up the corn tortillas the way I liked.
Something wasn't quite right.
And I made a mistake. Stormed into the kitchen and fixed it. I was not gracious at all. And the Lord just ate me up with conviction. Wow. Because I had been talking to other people about how to teach their children to be gracious over meals. And here I wasn't even gracious.
Well, and, you weren't really that bad.
Well, good thing you can't see my heart.
Even when you're awful, you're not that bad. But, yeah.
I was pretty awful.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah, we have to be an example to our kids.
Okay.
And that means that we have to be careful not to be whiny and complaining and, you know, always grasping after things that we don't have. It's okay to be content, to be competitive, and to strive to do better, to strive to work harder and be more successful. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about, you know, being a limp noodle in life, but we can't make those desires an idol.
No, no. And so we do need to be very careful as much as we can to be a good example, because after all, as believers, we are called to be contented people. And so if we're living our lives, you know, if we're living our lives following Christ closer and closer, then we should be setting that example already. But
so
that's a good
to,
check.
We need to cut out the complaining and dissatisfaction ourselves.
Yeah. And it is very easy to slip into that. Even sometimes even in a good spirit and good natured kind of grumbling and complaining. And you know what? I don't think that's pleasing to God.
No, it's not.
And our kids
are. By the way, would you forgive me for complaining yesterday morning?
Oh, forgive
me. So sweet.
No, you're fine. You're fine. But now, okay, that's our example. That's the one that they live with every moment, that's looking at the same leftovers on the plate or looking at the car that doesn't quite run the way. You know, they're living the same frustration that we are living at that moment.
We can give them other examples.
Exactly.
We can give them examples, heroes and heroines, through literature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a while back, we read the Pollyanna book as a family read aloud.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it changed our kids. It made them look for reasons to be glad. Mm-hmm. You know, reasons to be grateful instead of complaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we turned it into an audiobook, because it made such a big difference with our family. And then, you know, last year, we read Five Little Peppers. Mm-hmm. And one of the amazing things about the book Five Little Peppers is it teaches contentment, that, you know, this widow and her children are living in this little house. They really don't even really have but barely enough to eat. And yet they're happy with each other. They're happy with what God's provided. They rejoice in the gift of a few raisins to make their mom a birthday cake.
Mm.
You know, they've just got such a good attitude. And when we read that to the children, it changed their attitudes. They wanted to be like the Peppers. And I think that's one of the powerful things about story. You know, Jesus taught in parables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he taught us in parables. And I think, you know, parables are just, stories are incredibly powerful.
Okay.
Because, you know, if we read something, you know, it lights up a little part of our brain for learning. And if we hear it more, and if we act it out even more.
Yeah.
But if our emotions are engaged, it's like our whole brain gets involved in the learning, because our brain understands it's important.
Right.
Because our emotions are engaged. And when we can get our kids' emotions engaged in learning, then that helps them to drive that point home and carry it with them forever.
You know, something related to that, I think we need to keep an eye on our entertainment, because so much of entertainment finds humor in cynicism, in irony,
sarcasm.
And honestly, if that's not pleasing to God when it comes out of our mouths and when it comes out of our children's mouths, we need to be careful that we're not loading that into our minds.
And it's so easy to do this time of year.
Yeah.
We're all tired. We're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
They've had too much sugar and been too much relaxation, and everybody's a little fruity, and I've got lots of work to do to prepare for our taxes and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a real struggle. Yeah. We're tired. Money is always tight. There's always challenges. The weather is gray.
You know, before we go into that, Hal, let's stop and take a station break for a minute.
Okay.
Actually, we have an opening for a new sponsor because we've completed our sponsorship with Schoolhouse Teachers, who we love.
Yes.
And, but in the meantime, let's take the station break and tell them, you know, those stories that helped our family learn contentment and gratefulness so much, the Pollyanna series, the Five Little Pepper series.
Right.
We've turned them into audiobooks.
And they have been really popular.
Our kids love them.
And we've got, you know, Pollyanna is just a classic. And if you've seen the Disney version of it, ignore that. The book is ever so much better. And
it's real classic children's literature. This will add to your curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
It'll add to your kids' literature learning. Mm-hmm. It's appropriate for all ages. Even our teenagers loved it.
That's right.
And you know, our own kids beg to listen to it. We get on the in the car to go to their grandmother's house. It's like, can we listen to Five Little Peppers?
Right.
You know, they love it. It's entertaining. They're funny.
Mm-hmm.
And not only will it teach your children with good children's literature, but man, it'll change their hearts, change their attitudes.
Yeah. We've got several really good character building audiobooks out there on our website. Go to raisingrealmen.com/shop.
Good for history and literature, but most of all for character. Okay. So yeah, it's a struggle. It's a struggle and it's hard for our kids. What else can we do to teach them? We talked about giving them good examples. I think starting early makes a difference.
This is really important. And, you know, maybe you're listening and your kids are all 12 and up and said, okay, fine. You know, there's opportunities at different times in life and maybe this doesn't apply to you so much. But if you've still got younger kids, it's really interesting to me that children are learning about their world and their environment. You know, what should I expect from the world? From what their parents give them, show them, teach them, talk to them about. And so, like, you know, when you see that little toddler fall down and bump his elbow, and he doesn't cry immediately, but he looks back at mama like, should I be concerned? And if mama makes a big deal about it, he might say, oh, okay, falling down and going boom is a bad, scary thing, and it's so terrible. Or if she says, oh, you made a big noise here, let's get up and go, when he's obviously not hurt, then, you know, he might think, oh, okay, I don't need to be worried. Well, if your kids start out with the idea that I am entitled to my own bedroom, my own toys, and when I get big enough, my own car, and I'm going to pick where I go to college because I deserve it because I'm special, then that's not going to be a contented child.
You know what? I read some interesting research many years ago.
Yeah.
They studied the interaction of mothers with their infants and toddlers in several different cultures.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I don't even remember most of the results, but I do remember that in the Japanese culture, the Japanese mothers, they said, spent a lot of time teaching their kids to share. They would give the baby a toy and then ask for the toy back. And then give the baby the toy and ask for the toy back. And that was just a really important thing in their culture that they wanted to pass on very early. And I think it's very true that that the culture as your children move through those toddler and preschool years in your home is so important. Because, you know, I was talking to a young woman the other day.
Yeah.
And she only wanted, you know, a couple of children and had an attitude that, you know, it's just not fair to children to have more siblings. She talked about how much she resented her younger sibling when she was born. And I was really interested because shortly after that, I was talking to one of our adult children about that. And he was saying, you know, I want a ton of kids. And I probed him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that you and I decided very early that we were going to make sure our current children saw each new child as a blessing and a gift to our family and something we were excited about, I think it impacted our kids' attitude toward kids.
You know that it has. And the fact that, you know, we were blessed with a large family, we can't afford a 9-bedroom house. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. So our kids grown up sharing bedrooms, you know, sharing the toys, trading clothes back and forth and stuff like that. They just grew up expecting that. And they're very patient with that. And it doesn't bother them. And it's kind of funny because several of them have gone off to college and ended up in private rooms. And that's the first time they had their own space since they were in diapers.
And you know? They complained about it. They said it was lonely.
Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, you can, if you've got younger kids, you can sort of teach them this expectation, this idea that, hey, we live in a community and a family among other people, and it's good to be able to share, to be open, to be generous, not to be selfish or, you know, isolating or anything else. And so starting early makes the later years a lot easier if you have the opportunity.
It's good for kids to work for what they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, yeah, give your kids good gifts. We're expected to do that. But sure, also, let them work. Let them participate. Let them participate in, you know, things that the family needs, the family does. Because I think when we work for what we have, it makes us, oddly enough, less selfish and greedy. You know,
I think it does. And, you know, I think it's important in an age-appropriate way to share with your kids what your family's financial situation is.
Oh, I do too. They're,
now, you can burden them with too much information they can't understand or process, but just to get the lesson across to them, hey, we can't just run out and buy things because we feel like it, because there are limits to our resources. We have other responsibilities, even mom and dad.
Well, you know, I remember growing up and mm-hmm. making these huge lists for Santa Claus. My parents did Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not understand why he wouldn't bring me everything on my list.
Old elf.
Yeah, when I got older and understood that it was coming from my parents, and my parents had us doing helping them with the finances really young.
Yeah.
And understood the financial situation, that sales had been down the past month or something. It changed my attitude. And I've seen that in our kids too.
Yeah.
That when they understand our financial situation, instead of nagging, Mama, can we stop and get a Coke? Can we stop and get ice cream? Mm-hmm. I might say, I think I'll just drive through. And they'll say, no, we can wait till we get home, Mom. Let's just make sandwiches.
Yeah, the kids are acting as accountability, saying, no, that's all right. We'll make sandwiches, Mom. I'll take care of it when I get home, you know.
Well, I think encouraging your kids to give helps them to be more content.
You know, Sam Levinson was a Jewish comedian back in the 60s, I think he was. And he grew up in a very poor household with about, you know, six kids and all. They lived in literally a Jewish ghetto in New York. And he said they had a box in their house that was labeled for the poor. And they would put, you know, an occasional penny or, you know, a little bit of money in there from time to time. Because he said, you know, we were giving money to the poor people. It made us feel rich.
Yes.
Yeah, even though they had a cold water walk up flat, you know, kind of thing they talked about. But the fact that he was out, well, it's kind of like my grandfather used to be real active with the Kiwanis Club back in his town. And he worked with Meals on Wheels. And we asked him, where are you going, Grandpa? I said, oh, I'm taking food to the old people. You know,
he was like 88 or something.
Yeah, okay. But it made him feel young to say, oh, I'm going to help, go help the elderly folks. Well, you know what? If we teach our kids to be generous, to look for opportunities that they can bless other people,
yeah,
then that sort of sends them a message that you've got what you need.
Right.
You've got enough to share.
And so I think it helps to encourage your children to give to one another,
mm-hmm.
encourage them to give to the whole family, even to give to you. This is very hard for me. My children love to do things for me. And they'll come and they've got, you know, mm-hmm. $5. They want to spend three of it to buy me a milkshake.
Yeah.
And I want to say, no, honey, save that for yourself. But I realized, yeah, that's not the message we get from the Word of God. It is not save that for yourself. It's mm-hmm. give and it shall be given unto you.
Right.
And so I've learned, and I still have to fight it every time. I have learned to say, thank you, honey. That's very gracious of you. Thank you for taking care of mommy like that.
Well, I think, especially with boys, I think you're getting them used to the idea of taking care of other people.
Oh, such an important thing for boys.
Taking care of their family and whatnot, you know. So all of those, I think all of those things are important. And
some of us have too easy a life, though.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there isn't much need to do without or to sacrifice for someone else. Maybe you don't have enough adversity in your life. That hasn't been our problem in a long time.
Well, we kind of, sort of tongue-in-cheek, we do say this in some of our workshops. If you don't have adversity in your life, how about go create some?
Go camping.
You know, go camping. Do something.
Work together.
You know, do something that's difficult, something that's uncomfortable or challenging or whatever, because
work at the food ministry together.
Well, sure.
You know, do something that requires you to sacrifice for one another. that requires you to put up with some stuff,
mm-hmm.
that requires you to put your sarcasm and your anger aside and work together.
And you know, another thing too, you mentioned working at a food bank or something like that. You know, I remember when I was in cancer treatment and I'm over at the oncology clinics at Duke Medical, I remember looking around at people who were obviously way, way sicker than I was. And I was sick. I was, you know.
You were stage four.
I was stage four. I was seriously sick. But I look at people that they obviously had had brain surgery. They're people that were, you know, so weak they couldn't stand and other things, which I was never challenged with. And I always came away thinking, whew, I got it easy. And so, you know, when you're helping other people through their difficulties, oftentimes that reminds you, hey, your life is not as hard as you feel like it is. You know, because God gives us the grace to bear the things that he puts us through.
And it gives us compassion. You know, I remember it just really struck me so many years ago. I read God's Smuggler about Brother Andrew and the way he smuggled Bibles into closed countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him talking about a family that lived in maybe Amsterdam,
yeah,
or Copenhagen, somewhere in Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was very startled to find out that although they lived in a very small flat,
yeah,
in town, that they were extremely wealthy,
mm-hmm.
but that they used that wealth to support missions and to help the poor. And, you know, that just really struck me, that how pleasing to God that must be.
Yes.
You know,
I remember that story.
To use their excess to for the Lord's work. That's somebody that the Lord can trust with money.
Well, I have met people like that. Now, we've known some people locally like that who seem to be...
We've known people there are people who help us who are like that.
Well, it seemed like God has gifted them with the ability to make wealth, to earn and to profit. And they were very open-handed with it, you know, to say, hey, I've got all this money coming in. Let me send you on this trip, or let me underwrite this project, or let me replace this appliance or whatever. And we've seen them do that for all kinds of people. And, you know, wow, what a great lesson. And, you know, we point that out to our kids and say, you know, that man over there is a wealthy man, but he is not an arrogant and selfish man. He's a generous, giving, loving man. And that's different than the cartoon that some people will hold up about wealthy people.
Well, it really is. And we see people giving, you know, that aren't even wealthy, but giving out of what God has given them. You know, mm-hmm. like the man in our church that fixed Caleb's air conditioner this last summer. We were across the country and he got a new job and needed to move. And you know, a gentleman mm-hmm. in our church just stepped up and fixed his air conditioner for him. And
yeah.
I was just so blessed by that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way I want to be when I grow up. You know, all people, these stories remind me that I'm not as mature as I think. You know, I want to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we want our kids to be like that. We want our kids to have a heart of service and compassion and generosity and not selfish, me, 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 mine, 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 mine.
I'd like to kind of wrap up on that thought. You just sort of jostled something in my head there. That coming back around to how we started this, that we don't teach these things because we have arrived at a point of moral authority. You know, we don't teach our children because we are perfect and they need to get on the ball. But rather, we teach because we serve a great and a loving God,
yes,
who's given us an expectation. And just like the Apostle Paul said, I am striving toward the mark.
Yes.
I am continuing to grow. I'm continuing to struggle with sin. I'm not there yet, but follow me and let's go.
Yes.
You know, and that's an important thing with contentment. Are you a contented person? Probably. You aren't.
Most of us are not.
But we're called to be.
Amen.
We're called to be content. And as we struggle with that ourselves, we need to bring our children along. Because if we just say, well, I'm too embarrassed to talk about it because I haven't achieved, they won't even know they're supposed to.
Right.
And who knows? Maybe your children will be more contented than you were. I think mine probably are.
Oh, our children are definitely more contented than we are.
Yeah. And
God bless them. I'm thankful to see it.
Yeah. And so let me just encourage you, you know, that as people go through this reflective period in January, you know, sometimes it's going to be really grim now. There's going to be no soft drinks.
And we have to lose weight and get
sugars
in shape.
And it's going to be, so much exercise and all. And it can be very grim. But you know what? There's a lot of joy in doing things right and becoming a better servant and disciple to the Lord. and to see our kids growing in grace.
Amen.
And so don't be discouraged. It's a new opportunity. It's a great time to start. And
be content.
Yeah. So let's be content. And we want to encourage you to. If you are starting off this year thinking, gee, I'd like to be more generous people, we really could use some supporters. If you would like to support this ministry, which is not just this program, but we have a wide-ranging teaching ministry, publishing, writing. We speak all over the country. You know what? You can come out. You can start with patreon.com/HalandMelanie, and you can become a financial supporter right there. patreon.com/HalandMelanie.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
.com. Yes. Or you can contact us, come to our website, raisingrealmen.com or halandmelanie.com. If you'd like for us to speak at your event, at your church, at your support group, at your convention, at your high school graduation, whatever it is, we travel all over the country, literally all over the dumb continent.
And we're booking more dates in 2017 and 2018 right now. So
yes,
get in touch. We'd love to come to your area.
Well, look, I think we're about out of time. We should be contented with the time slot that we've been given by our sponsor and host. So until next time, we do hope you'll join us again. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
Thanks so much for listening.
Happy New Year, y'all.
Bye now. You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.